Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're jumping into Amy Poehler's memoir, Yes Please.
Yeah, it's a great one. And it's really not just, you know, your typical celebrity book.
Right. It's this really honest, kind of vibrant look at ambition, motherhood, friendship, all that messy stuff involved in building a creative life.
Exactly. And what we really want to unpack today is sort of our mission is how she turns vulnerability into this, like, real strength.
Yeah, this whole idea of saying yes, please to opportunities, even the scary ones, how that might actually be a key to, well, real success and happiness.
It's full of that refreshing honesty you mentioned and, you know, surprisingly deep insights, plus the humor you'd expect.
Definitely. Okay, so let's unpack this journey.
Sounds good.
So Amy Meredith Poehler, she starts out in Newton, Massachusetts, right?
Suburbs. Mm-hmm.
And her parents, Eileen, a teacher, and William, an accountant they were, like her first audience. Super supportive. It seems like she was always performing, even as a little kid, using laughter to connect.
Yeah, and her mom, Eileen especially, really encouraged that creative spark, but also instilled these core values, education, hard work, dignity.
That sounds like a really solid foundation.
It absolutely was.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see how that early environment fostered this deep need for real connection, which she found in performing.
And her mom being both nurturing and independent, that seems important later on.
Totally foundational. It gave her this early model for how women could lead, how you could balance supportiveness with, you know, being your own person.
So she takes this to Boston College, joins my mother's flea bag, the improv group.
Right. And that's where she describes finding this, like, intoxicating rush, live performance creating with people.
It sounds like finding her calling almost, or at least her tribe.
Definitely her tribe. But those college years, while building confidence, were also full of uncertainty. Like, okay, this is great, but can comedy actually be a job?
Yeah, the big question.
And she started noticing, even then, the specific hurdles for women in comedy, which, you know, fueled her later on.
And the improv rules started sticking. Say yes, support your partner.
Exactly. Those weren't just stage rules anymore. They started becoming kind of life rules for her.
So graduates in 93 and makes this huge leap, moves to Chicago to do comedy for real.
Yeah, talk about a leap of faith, trading security for this, well, this dream.
And the whole drug den apartment story tells you a lot about the early days.
Oh, totally. The resourcefulness, the grit. Chicago scene was amazing. Second City, Improv Olympic, but also incredibly tough.
You really get the sense it wasn't just about career. It was about choosing art over a conventional path.
Absolutely. And what's fascinating is how that period of, you know, grinding difficulty, the late nights, no money, rejection, how that forged her.
Made her self-reliant, adaptable.
All of that. But also, crucially, the importance of community, finding her people among other artists. That shared struggle really shaped her whole collaborative approach later on.
And it worked. She gets onto the Second City main stage, and then bam, Saturday Night Live in 2001.
Yeah, SNL. Imagine walking into that. The crazy schedule, the pressure, the competition.
And she made her mark. Caitlin, the Hillary Clinton impression.
Right. And SNL was huge for developing her political comedy voice.
Yeah.
Especially Weekend Update with Tina Fey.
That partnership was iconic.
It really was. And if you look at the bigger picture, it did more than just get laughs. It kind of helped redefine female voices in late night.
How so?
Well, it showed this smart, sharp, collaborative dynamic. It wasn't just one woman in a sea of men. And that experience, you know, really cemented her commitment to creating more inclusive spaces herself.
Which leads perfectly into Parks and Recreation in 2009. Leslie Knope.
Ah, Leslie Knope. It felt like Leslie was Amy in so many ways, right? The optimism, the determination, the fierce loyalty.
Totally. Civic-minded, supporting her friends no matter what.
And Parks and Rec really cemented her status beyond just being a performer. She became this creative leader. Leslie Knope was like a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, she really was.
And through Leslie, Amy could promote these values she believed in, optimism, community. It showed how you could use your platform for, you know, broader impact.
So through all this, she's developing this core philosophy, practical optimism, she calls it. And yes, please.
Mm-hmm. And it's important, like you said earlier, it's not this aggressive yes. It's more thoughtful, grateful almost, accepting possibilities, even the daunting ones.
Because that's where the growth is, even if it's uncomfortable.
Exactly. That's where the unexpected wisdom often lies, in that vulnerability. And it ties into her idea of collaborative creativity.
You mean the best stuff comes from supporting each other, not competing?
Precisely. Mutual support over cutthroat competition. And then there's productive vulnerability.
Okay, what's that exactly?
It's the idea that being honest about struggles, about not knowing everything, isn't weakness. It's actually a source of strength. It builds trust.
So admitting you don't have the answer can actually make a team stronger.
Yeah, it creates psychological safety. People feel they can take risks, be honest themselves. It challenges that old idea of the infallible leader, you know?
Yeah.
Makes you wonder how much we cling to that outdated image of success.
That's a really interesting point. It wasn't just theoretical for her, though. How does she actually do that, build those environments?
Well, she modeled it constantly. She'd be the first to admit she messed up or didn't know something. She'd actively ask for input from everyone, down to the PAs. And she always, always shared credit.
Making her scene partner look good, basically.
Exactly. That improv principle, but applied to, like, managing a whole show. It wasn't just a one-off. It was a continuous, conscious effort that created this really positive ripple effect.
Okay, so career's taking off, but personally, things were complex, too. The memoir talks about her marriage to Will Arnett and their divorce in 2012.
Yeah, and she handles it with such honesty and grace, acknowledges the pain, but without getting sensational or gossipy.
How does she frame dealing with that kind of adversity?
It's that mix again. Practical problem solving, but also emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, humor. She sees these painful things not just as stuff to get through, but as potential sources of wisdom.
She leans on her friends, her people.
Actively. That's key. She doesn't try to tough it out alone. That collaborative approach extends to her personal life, even in crisis. It's about seeking and accepting support.
And then becoming a mother. Archie and Abel, born in 08 and 10, she's very open about that too.
Incredibly candid. The joy, yes, but also the chaos, the guilt, the struggle of balancing this huge career with family.
Did motherhood change her approach to work?
It seems like it really clarified her priorities, made her maybe more selective, helped her figure out which opportunities really mattered, aligned with her values versus just, you know, chasing the next thing or feeding the ego. Time became much more precious.
The book has some great anecdotes that illustrate all this, like the drug den apartment story you mentioned earlier.
Right. It wasn't just about the squalor. It was about the intense creativity happening despite the squalor. The friendships forged in that shared struggle.
A lesson in resilience, finding community in chaos.
Exactly. And how sometimes those tough beginnings create the strongest bonds. Or think about the Parks and Rec finale.
Yeah, she writes about that, filming with so much emotion.
It wasn't just about ending the show. It was about the depth of connection with the cast and crew. Emphasizing that those relationships the community built during the work, that's often the real takeaway. More valuable than the project itself sometimes.
It's a powerful reminder about what really lasts.
These stories really bring it home, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
The connections, the shared humanity. It makes you think, how do those themes, finding meaning where you don't expect it, using your platform well, prioritizing relationships, how do those play out in your own life?
Okay, let's try and distill this. Some key takeaways from Amy Poehler and yes, please.
All right. First, I'd say an emotional insight. The power of vulnerable leadership. Her openness wasn't a bug, it was a feature. It actually strengthened her leadership.
By building trust, making her relatable.
Precisely. It challenges that old top-down power dynamic. Admitting imperfection fosters connection and makes you, ultimately, more effective. It's not just nice, it's strategic.
Okay, strategic vulnerability. Got it. What's next?
Second, an intellectual insight. Collaboration is strategic advantage. Creating those supportive, inclusive environments wasn't just idealism. It was smart strategy.
Because it leads to better work.
Demonstrably. Better creative outcomes, more sustainable success. It's just a better way to operate, especially in creative fields. It's good business, not just good morals.
Right, that's a key distinction. And the third?
Third, a universal life lesson. Saying yes, please, to imperfect opportunities. That core idea. Growth happens when you accept challenges. Even when you feel scared, aren't prepared.
It's a framework for taking risks, maybe. Pushing your boundaries.
Exactly. But in a thoughtful way. Not reckless, but deliberate. Saying yes to the opportunity for growth, even if the situation isn't perfect.
And we have to mention the mantra, good for her, not for me.
I love that one.
Oh, it's brilliant. So simple, so powerful, especially for women, combating that comparison trap.
Fostering solidarity instead of competition.
Totally. And for you listening, think about it in this age of curated social media. It's a tool for a more generous outlook. Good for your mental health, good for your relationships. Celebrate others without feeling like you're lacking.
It really frees you up. So Thinking about all this, what stands out to you? Maybe there's one opportunity, something that feels a bit scary that you could say yes, please to.
Or maybe just reconsidering your own definition of success. Amy's story is powerful proof that you can reach incredible heights while staying, you know, decent, generous, authentic.
You don't have to choose between being successful and being a good person.
That's the core message, I think. You absolutely can and should aim for both.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into Yes, Please. It's more than just entertaining, isn't it? It's almost like an instruction manual for navigating adulthood today with humor, heart, and yeah, a lot of yes, please.
We hope you reflect on your own journey, maybe find some yes, please moments. Join us next time for another deep dive. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.